You're listening to the Rescuer MBS podcast with hosts Laura McGladry and Marcel Rodriguez. For show notes and reference materials, visit www.anchor.fm/RescuerMBS. Rescuer MBS, know your limits, improve your performance. Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Rescuer MBS podcast. Maybe we should just start out by explaining what this is all about. So why are we here? What are we doing? And what can people expect if they tune in on a regular basis to this podcast?
Yeah, it seems like this conversation started over the course of last year, as we both have been engaged in this topic of stress injury and rescue and also resilience and some of the new best practice. I know that I have an opportunity, and I think you do too, just given our positions, to talk with folks who are leading in this field and have a lot of insight. And so often I've thought, oh, I wish I could have recorded that conversation or shared it. It was so insightful or poignant to the topic at hand. So I think that's where we started thinking about maybe a cache of these conversations and interviews related to the topics that we've been exploring. And it's probably specific to mountain rescue, but I think there's a lot of implication for folks who do other types of rescue and even who climb.
I think one of the things that was really key in our early discussions and as well focusing, as you said, on the wilderness context or on the backcountry context, but also really looking at that whole concept of the unpaid professional. There's that whole get the call, I spawn the pack, I go do the mission, and then I come back and have to go to work seems not as heavily covered.
I would say that because I work with the paid professional, law enforcement, fire, EMS, if you will, sort of in my day job, I think I have this advantage to see that there is a lot moving in the national conversation for fire and law enforcement. And I think in the last year where I've been really surprised to see these sort of deserts of areas where wildland fire and, you know, climbing rangers in the parks and unpaid professionals and search and rescue and maybe ski patrol and these different areas, it just, none of the what helps seems to be getting out in the way I think at least both of us would like it to into these rescue populations. And so I think that's also probably where the impetus for psychological first aid, some of these best practices, and the real commitment to what helps. And I think that was a lot of what we wanted to explore in this platform.
I would absolutely agree. And I think, in addition, I think one of the benefits is by starting a larger conversation, maybe a more national conversation outside of individual groups, is that we then provide a language and a structure and kind of an infrastructure for groups that maybe are a little more dispersed, maybe a little more disparate, to be able to interact with one another in a way that allows them to kind of work on their mental health, work on decreasing stress injuries, and just have a wider conversation, you know, as opposed to everybody doing their own little thing and coming to it in their own time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as the national conversation really moves toward, as folks are starting to recognize stress injury as a phenomenon that occurs in occupational or operational stress exposure, I think that you'll find that the big cities or the certain rescues have heard about this or have been engaged for a few years. And I think part of that, like, I think this is what you're saying too, the target for me would be that smaller rescue in rural Colorado or in Arizona, or somewhere where you might be a single rescuer, a part of a team where you want to bring these practices back. And it would just be helpful to, like, hey, team, why don't you listen to this particular podcast? We just went through this. Maybe it's on incident support or psychological first aid or what helps or this injury type. And so I think that is probably a lot of the impetus as well.
Yes, I agree. But we usually agree. I think we often agree. So it's not unusual for us to agree. I think that's part of this back and forth is that we talk about this stuff a lot. We agree. We don't always have the exact same point of view, but we do tend to agree on the basics.
Well, maybe we can spice it up with some good conflict here.
Well, speaking of conflict, let's talk about the name.
Yeah, that's true.
So to be perfectly transparent, this is, so we settled on, we settled on Rescuer MBS. We went back and forth on a lot of different names. And I would say, in full transparency, not 100% of the hosts are fully on board with the name, but it's kind of, we had to go with something. And so the basic concept, certainly the way I viewed it in looking at this, is that, you know, when we look at ourselves as rescuers, when we go out there, you know, every piece of life safety equipment we've got has, you know, its minimum braking strength right on it. And when you can look at that, you can say, I know the limits of that gear. I know how the manufacturer wants me to use that gear and what's the right way to use that gear. And I know because I'm skilled, I can put that into a system. I can do things with it. I can push it, you know, a little bit. But if I get towards those limits, I know that I have to mitigate, sure that I can keep everything safe and just rig in a way that's going to keep me very safe. And when you really think about it, the most important element of every rescue, which is the rescuer, we don't have that. We don't know what that limit is. And so what we just tend to do is we tend to blow past that limit, and we usually find out what our MBS is when we've exceeded it and we've broken or bent or twisted something in ourselves. But, and I think that's, you know, our goal is to really provide a structure, provide some tools that rescuers can use so that they can understand their own MBS, kind of tune that, maybe strengthen it a little bit, but understand it, understand what those limits are, so that we don't find ourselves just blowing past those and finding ourselves with stress injuries, you know, unexpectedly. And so that's kind of the concept behind it. We'll see where it goes. Maybe we'll change the name at some point, but for now, we had to start with something, so that's where we're at.
And I will say, I really like this. I mean, the awareness around the concept that we all have an MBS, I think, is really where the conversation is, because none of us get into rescue thinking that this even exists for us. So,
yeah, I think we always kind of view ourselves as this infinitely malleable and expanding resource where our strength just continues to grow and grow and grow, and that, you know, we'll do that Superman thing and be able to lift the car off the child. And, you know, yes. The problem is that that's a really great picture, but it's not always the reality. And the things that we take away from those events, and we say, I'm a pro, that doesn't bother me, I've been through this a bunch, I can compartmentalize, you know, all those little myths and lies that we tell ourselves, they're really just hiding the fact that we've blown past our own personal MBS. And now we've got those little hidden stress fractures, we've got the, you know, minor deformities, we've got the things that have made that piece of equipment not as strong as it once was.
Yeah, I think that what continues to amuse me doing this work is, like, it works for you in that way until it doesn't. Yeah. Right. And you wouldn't say that about your climbing gear. I'm just going to use my harness, so it'll probably work, unless it doesn't.
Yeah, I'll use it until it busts, and then I'll replace it. It's like we always try to stop before that point. And I think the other part is that, well, oftentimes, like our, you know, like our equipment is, sometimes we're not the ones who recognize that it's time to change to change it out. Is that it does take somebody else to say, hey, you know what, that's it's time for you to get rid of that. I know you love it, but
something needs to change. What do you think about indulging me in my, if I get to share for posterity, my idea for this show?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I remember after being, I was sitting in your class, you're teaching, what class was this? Ropes?
It was Rope Rescue Technician Certification Course.
Right. And I think it just, there was a moment where you're teaching, maybe sort of toward the new folks, a reminder to everyone that about needing to gear up to be, I think, roped in and helmeted if you're going to go past a certain point, right? And your comment was, just because you're a rescuer doesn't mean you get a pass on gravity. And I remember thinking, there's something to that, isn't there? And then I think it was perhaps the next day, I had a lot going on myself, and I was feeling the stress of it. And I think you echoed that back to me. Just because you're a rescuer doesn't mean you get a pass on gravity, right? Just because I do this for a living doesn't mean it doesn't affect me too. Just because you're rescuing other people doesn't mean that you're not going to be impacted by their stories, as we think. So I kind of liked the idea for the show of just calling it gravity, because I think over time, you know, this is gravity. Like, if you put yourself into a state of depletion and keep going and paying out and not putting back in, there will come a time when the bank account's empty. You know, in a sense, that seemed like gravity, like just the way it goes. But we're always, like you said, so surprised when it happened. You know, when the tones go off or the pager, you get a call out, and this time you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, that's a predictable pattern that, you know, I see happening over time again and again. So it's basically, whether it's traumatic exposure or depletion, it is predictable in the face of exposure and depletion that you're going to just come to a point where this happens. So that is, in a sense, and I just thought gravity would be kind of a cool name, but thanks for letting me share that.
No, that's perfect. I think we also batted around a bunch of other names that sounded an awful lot like recovery programs and different things, or like meditation.
Yes,
definitely some of those. But so like I say, we'll sit here for now. We'll see where it goes. And the
audience certainly vote and let us know if they
absolutely. So maybe before we dive too deep, maybe we should explain why we're diving in and who we are and what perspective we're coming from. So my name is Marcel Rodriguez. I'm located in Portland, Oregon. And amongst other things, I am a senior member of a search and rescue team here. We're a fairly busy team. I'm also a member of a search and rescue team in Iceland and spend some time there every year doing search and rescue. In addition to that, I'm a EMT, wilderness EMT, and as we talked about, a technical rope rescue instructor. And that I've got around 200 missions about under my belt at this time, and have seen the effects of stress injuries not only on myself but on my teammates. And we are all unpaid professionals on our team. And, you know, we've seen people come and go throughout the years, not always for the best reasons, and oftentimes with a very sudden departure related to various things, oftentimes to a traumatic incident. And I think from my perspective, over the past couple of years, I've become more involved in the whole study of and trying to mitigate stress injuries within both our team and within our patients. So that's the perspective that I will bring to this. Beyond that, I'll leave it to you, Laura.
Great. And maybe you can all share a little bit about me, and then maybe you can share kind of where our paths crossed or how.
Yes, that's true.
You can share that first if you like.
Yeah. So you and I have known each other, I want to say 8 years now. I think it is somewhere around that. We first met at a Knowles Wilderness EMT course that I was taking and you were teaching in Golden, Colorado. And we've subsequently, over that time, started to spend more and more time together talking about things less and less related to Knowles and Wilderness EMT, and more and more about life and stress injuries and everything in between.
Yep. Exactly right. And I think the last couple years we've had the opportunity, we get to talk about a lot of rescues and just where there's application. I think in your rescue, when you're in a leadership position, we've had an opportunity to also see this played out in team formation. I think one of the goals here is to bring some of the innovations, like we said, or things that teams are doing to give ideas to other teams, which is a tremendous opportunity.
You have been my SAR buddy.
Thank you. And the mission continues. So my name is Laura McGladry, and I am kind of a rare breed dual board psychiatric and emergency medicine nurse practitioner. I got my start many years ago as a RAF guide and in guide in sort of mountains, and not so much, I would say. We did some rocks, but not at the extent that you do. Back in those days, I got my start early on with a small search and rescue in Colorado. And even back then, I remember thinking, you know, I was very young. I was like, man, some of this stuff is like the worst thing I've ever seen. I was already a nurse at the time. And I was like, man, this is going to leave a mark. I kind of remember thinking that and watched that happen, I think, with fellow responders, which I think is a lot of this impetus. My background for many years has been in emergency medicine, so I continue to be an emergency responder. I still work in the emergency department as a nurse practitioner. I've been a Knowles instructor teaching wilderness medicine for a few decades now, kind of had the chance to do that all over the world. Have had the pleasure to work with Knowles as we've integrated stress injuries and psychological first aid into our curriculum as an injury type with the physical toolkit. So hope we'll have some chance to talk about that and the impact really of treating these injuries as any other injury type. And now I have the pleasure, in my day job, I work with first responders, law enforcement, and fire, EMS, after critical stress and operational stress injuries, and kind of all types of psychological impact. I still volunteer for a few ski patrols here in Colorado, both as an advanced life support and also as a stress and resilience advisor. And then I think as it relates to this, I have the opportunity, often I work with a lot of different search and rescues, training and advising and supporting critical incident and resilience training, et cetera, around the country. So I do have the vantage point probably of what a lot of rescues are doing. And again, I work with some very inspiring people and teams. And I think that, again, was sort of my motivation that other teams could hear each other and each other's stories. And ultimately, I think what will be great is for folks to connect and share their best practices and share their training and share what's working with each other so that folks aren't in silos and they don't have to reinvent the wheel. And there's lots of areas we could talk about where that's happening right now.
Yeah, and I think that as we kind of look forward as to why we're doing this and why we feel this is so important, I would say the thing that really, I think anecdotally, we all kind of know that that stress isn't good, and that maybe as responders that we're under maybe a greater level of stress than a lot of people. But I think what really struck me as I started understanding the topic a little better was just kind of the profound impacts when you start to look at just things like reduced life expectancy, and all of the different kind of physiological aspects of what happens with stress injuries and just how absolutely vulnerable responder communities are. And I think, I can think, from personal observation and personal experience, just, again, looking at that unpaid professional community of people that, don't particularly have in many cases, that same infrastructure and environment around them after some of these calls where they have that opportunity to do big formal debriefs or have those resources available. They just literally have to go home, go to work, and stick everything in a little box and hope it all goes away, which we know doesn't really work. But I think that, to me, when we start to look at, I know as a team, when we started looking at it, as a team, and the impact that we really view that we as a, especially as a leadership group within the team, have a not only an ethical and a moral responsibility to our members to not do that to them. When people are doing something that that they're doing for others and really doing it in a very selfless way, it seems extremely unfair to then say, well, the cost of doing that thing is you're gonna die earlier and have ulcers and kick your dog and abuse.
Type 2 diabetes, cancer, heart disease, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think that naming what the it is new to the conversation, right? I mean, I think that before, and especially when you get into the unpaid professional and the seasonal worker, for instance, wildland fire or ski patrol, at the end of the season, if you feel terrible physically, emotionally, mentally, and you decide, I can't do another season, and you just don't sign up the next year, it's not that you're coming to work and people are noticing that you're hurting. You're on to something else, and then people just think that's how you are. And so, I think recently one of the teams I worked with, the team leader shared a story where someone hadn't been around for a while, turned in their radio and their harness and said, thanks a lot, I'm done. And so I think initially the folks on the team were like, thanks for your service. It was great to have you. And this team leader does a lot of work around this and decided to follow that member, you know, out to the parking lot, as it were, and sort of ask the question. And it turns out the report was, I'm not sleeping. I am not getting my work done. I am not going into social situations. Things are really bad for me, and I can't do this anymore. And luckily, that because that team leader knew this is a stress injury and you probably sustained it, she's like, I know what kind of summer we had. I know what kind of year we had. You came by this honestly, was able to get that person into support. And whether or not they stay on the team, it's probably the chances are higher, of course, but it's probably another matter now. It's really about, like you said, it's not fair that it's like getting a back injury and then not being able to go to your day job because you volunteered on rescue. That's just not fair. So I think that understanding and recognizing this for what it is helps us to start getting curious, doing extra interviews, et cetera, for folks in this unpaid professional realm.
It's an important point that you made about naming the it. And I think in addition to naming it is really admitting that it's there and that it affects us all. Because I think for a long time, people, you know, it's really easy to look at things like, you know, like stress injuries and people's reactions to situations and saying, oh, well, they couldn't cut it or they weren't tough enough or things like that. And then to be able to bring into the conversation that that's just not true, you know, that these things, you know, the things that a lot of us see on a pretty regular basis are the kind of things that do leave a mark. And you know, the fact that it does and the fact that someone is affected by something that doesn't make them a wuss, it makes them human. that's the one thing that we all have in common, you know, and I think that's a really one of those things where just changing it so that we don't look at it as a weakness or something, but just, you know, something that we can expect out of certain situations. That and not everybody's affected in the same way, and not everybody gets the same mark, but most of the stuff that can kind of look at empirically and say that's, you know, that's something that would leave a mark. I think most of the time, I can say, I used to talk about it, you know, I was like really great at compartmentalizing things. And what you really realize is that's, you're really good at hiding things for a while.
Lack of self-contact is another way, yeah. You know, to talk about that. Well, and in the end, I think that we need to change the entire conversation. I think that it would be like any other occupational exposure where we should actually say, if you're in a high exposure occupation, let's say you're on a hazmat team responding to radioactive material, we would never say, you let that get on you. That's your deal, and we're not going to support you. We would also not just send someone away. We'd say, you're in a high exposure occupation. We anticipate that this is going to impact you without mitigation. And that's a very different conversation than I think what is currently, and I see this again in structural fire and law enforcement, like, why is this getting you? How could you let this get to you? When really, I think what we should say is that these professions that before, you know, and this is the first century where we've lined up for very high exposure, one after another traumatic exposure to us. We should anticipate that these exposures are going to change us and fundamentally impact us unless we have, in essence, PPE and our own ways that we mitigation or strengthen a system to integrate this stuff. So that's, I think the conversation actually needs to be turned on its head from an occupational exposure standpoint. And we should really be saying at the beginning of folks' training perspectives when they join, hey, there's an occupational injury type that's likely to be the most common thing that impacts you above back injuries or needle sticks. And it's going to take a lot of work to mitigate it. You can definitely do it. There's a lot we know helps. But if you do nothing, the cumulative effect of this will likely impact you. That's where I think that conversation needs to go.
So with you as the medical professional half of this team, I think what might be helpful is if you give everyone a quick definition of what are we talking about with stress injuries? You know, what is it that we're actually, we're using that term a lot, but maybe not everybody's familiar with it in the context that we're using it or exactly.
Well, stress injuries actually was a term that was first used by the military in the context of combat and operational stress, first aid, and the stress continuum that we talk about, again, was first developed and used by the military, Patricia Watson's work, etc. And I think that just having a resource for folks to take a look at where that came from would be really helpful. You know, the idea is that the only term that we've been using for stress impact, I think, in rescue for a long time is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And while this is one particular way that symptomology can play out, it's really a late changing phenomenon. I mean, for folks I see, again, in the workplace and professional rescue, you really have to demonstrate loss of function for a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. So in essence, this is like waiting till folks are so impacted by their stress that their relationships are impacted, their work life is impacted, their ability to rescue is impacted, or they're using so many numbing tools to be able to go to their job every day that that's impacting them. And so the idea along stress injuries and really also how the military conceptualized this, and you certainly could call them occupational stress injuries. I think they're operational stress injuries is the terminology used in Canada. But the idea is that these are an injury type like any other injury type with early and late changing signs or reactions, meaning you could, as you know, have a lung injury that is a contusion to your lung, or you could have a full pneumothorax. The same is true here. You can be stress impacted without being injured, or you can have an early injury type that might look more like loss of motivation, loss of your spark, just not a change like I used to love this and now I don't, or a short fuse, or things that you notice about yourself, or more fatigue or depletion, or just, I love the term motivational exhaustion. You know, if we catch those things early and if we look for it in each other, then we mitigate it there. It's like catching diabetes with just elevated blood glucose before you have physical signs in your body. Same thing there, diet and exercise and you're back on track. Here, if we could recognize when those changes first occur, then folks wouldn't go down that longer changing track of this injury type. And so injury, I think, is a much more appropriate term. You know, we talk about this again in the professional rescuer with occupational health because it really is an injury type, meaning you could sustain a single incident or cumulative effect. The reason I think it's important is that it, like any other injury type on your job, if you're a wildland firefighter, you're a climber, let's say, and you fall and you break your leg, then there's a path back, right? Anyone can get hurt. Anyone could get better. I think when we only relegate this to PTSD and we wait for those very late changing signs, it'd be like waiting for people to show up. You know, again, I work in the emergency department, like let's wait till they're in diabetic ketoacidosis before we do something. Well, you can do that, but PTSD in late formation is really hard to treat. And although you can, there are many things we can do. It takes sometimes years of people's lives and it takes a long time to get back. And we don't have a roadmap. Whereas injuries, they occur to you at work, just like anything else, like a fall or a chainsaw accident, et cetera. There's no shame in it. It was a workplace injury. And here's the roadmap to reverse the injury type. So there's a lot to that. I think that, you know, one of the biggest things we face right now, candidly, in supporting this injury type is folks feeling like it means that they're mentally ill. And I think that is wholly untrue. I think this is a predictive pattern of exposure that will occur over time if not mitigated. That's categorically not a mental illness.
Well, I also like one of the things you said there is something that I have found incredibly true just over and over, which is that, you know, it's, you know, part of it is the individual, but it's also the responsibility of everyone around them. So, you know, the more people that we can bring in from the team, and that I think it just meshes very perfectly with, you know, how we kind of view the responsibilities or priorities, you know, when you start to look at, you know, that the old who's number one, right? Everybody knows this one is like, you know, I'm number one, then my partner, then my team, then the public, then my subject. And it's like both experienced and heard enough stories of, you know, where people were kind of in full blown personal trauma and not really understanding it until somebody just took them aside and said, hey, let me tell you what I'm observing.
Yeah.
You know, and not in that sort of intervention-y way, but just in a, here's you and me as, you know, two people talking that know each other, you know,
right.
I'm concerned about you. And I think that's just that, right. that part of the whole thing that I think from kind of what, certainly what we've talked about and what I think what we're trying to do here is to not only have individuals understanding themselves, but also giving tools so that we can be better peers, better friends, better teammates to everyone around us and help them as well. Because, you know, the more we can do that, you know, we're helping them, they're helping us, and we, you know, we all help each other.
Well, by nature, this is an injury type. I mean, rescuers is an archetype. You know, folks who work on high reliability teams will have trained since the time they were very young, usually, to keep pushing the snooze button on their own feelings or emotions, because you have to go into the burning building or a dangerous situation or rappel off of something. So you have to keep putting the snooze button on your own physiology. And so you get, as a group of folks, people who don't know when they're in emotional pain, because we're not trained to do that. It doesn't matter, you know, on a 12-hour shift in the ER, if I have to go to the bathroom, you know, there's no time. I don't listen to that. And so this is by nature, in its essence, an injury type that will be better witnessed, seen, and picked up by each other. But we have to know what it is, again, and that's where I think recognition is so important.
Yeah, and it's got that same, it has that same falseness of that when you talk about hitting the snooze button is, you know, when you actually hit the snooze button, you think you're really going to help yourself with that extra 5 minutes and you realize
it's not,
you're not really doing yourself much good, but
yeah.
And well, I think,
and we'll get into that, I think, if we talk about how stress injuries form, but we're meant, you know, to rescue ourselves out of difficult situations. And when you have to say, I can't, when you can't say no, because your team's depending on you, or you're the only medic, or you're the only one who can do this, you're going to be in a situation where you have to override your own physiology. And that tends to be how we get hurt over time.
Absolutely. And these are certainly all things that we are planning on unpacking in future episodes and diving deep into all of these different aspects. So I think certainly we've got a bit of a roadmap ahead of us as far as looking at each aspect of stress injury formation, looking at the continuum of stress injuries as a tool for people to assess themselves and to assess each other, plus some exciting interviews out there. So I think there's certainly a lot of people with a lot of different aspects or that represent a lot of different aspects of this topic, both from the medical side, from the professional side, from the rescuer side, and you know, I think one of our intents is to talk with a lot of those different folks, see what's working, see who's doing interesting research that we can share and exciting bits that are out there, as well as, you know, helping people see what other teams are doing and what other teams are facing. Because I think oftentimes that's certainly what we see is that people either don't really know how to apply certain things to their own situation, or don't really know where to start. And I think we can provide some tools and some structure to that to assist people in getting started, as well as on our episode pages, we'll be giving resources and links to things that are important and relevant to what we're talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff happening right now. So I am looking forward to a chance to brag about what the teams are doing out there. So looking forward to it.
Pudding cups for all.
Pudding cups for all.
We would hope that if this sounds interesting to you, we hope you will join us on this journey. And as we start to unpack some of these things in the future, work towards helping everybody understand stress injuries and their impacts and how to deal with them a whole lot better. Thank you.
This has been the Rescuer MBS podcast.
please subscribe to receive new episodes and interviews as they come out. Contact us at rescuermbs@gmail.com. Rescuer MBS, know your limits, improve your performance.